Good evening, everyone. Thanks for waiting a little extra while I enjoyed my Thanksgiving weekend. As promised, this week we're wrapping up the season by talking about the potential future of public health. As per usual, since we're talking about the future here, this episode is heavily speculative, but at the very least, it's speculation based on a bunch of expert opinions. Throughout the season, we've talked about many public health advances, with massive benefits for society usually stemming from a combination of new scientific discoveries and organizations to spread those discoveries. As much as things have improved, there's still much work to be done. I'm going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, so bear with me, going generally from the widest to the more narrowly impactful. Let's start with really basic needs. A lot of this season has been spent discussing how improvements to water, food, shelter, and cleanliness make big differences in public health. A long time ago, only the richest of people would have been able to afford safe basic conditions required to be healthy. But of course, today that's no longer the case. Drinkable tap water in most wealthier countries is literally cheaper than dirt. Food isn't quite that cheap, but in most cases is quite affordable. In today's world, making such basic necessities available to everyone is technologically possible, but a lot of the world just isn't wealthy enough yet, which is one of the most important public health issues. Now, how you exactly fix poverty is a complicated question, but what's clear is that for decades, the number of people living in extreme poverty has declined. In 1990, just two decades ago, about 36% of the world population lived in extreme poverty, while in 2015, that number was down to 9.9%. A lot of this seems to be tied to regions, with the biggest change in the recent decades being that millions of people in Asia were lifted out of poverty, likely by the overall economic expansions of many Asian countries. Hopefully, whatever we're doing will keep working, and maybe someday everyone will have enough wealth to at least access basic human needs, which will have incredibly good effects on public health. We've also discussed a whole lot of preventative treatments in this season, which are often long-lasting and pretty cheap. To quote from Ben Franklin, "An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure." And while he was talking about fire safety, it absolutely applies to medicine too. To prevent infectious diseases, vaccines have been humanity's main tool of choice to date, although certainly not the only one. In 2013, it was estimated that vaccination programs prevent more than 2 million deaths a year among young children, which is pretty good, except that another 1.5 million deaths could be prevented if programs were expanded further and new vaccines were developed. As per usual, progress in public health depends both on new technology and the spread of that technology. This is especially prevalent right now in the midst of a coronavirus epidemic, where the pressing need for a vaccine has perfectly illustrated the necessity of both tech and distribution. It took a solid year of work just to get some vaccines developed at all, but now there are huge discussions ongoing about how to manufacture and how to distribute them, and questions about what's fair and what's even feasible. As I said, though, vaccines aren't the only way to prevent infectious disease. You've also got good old-fashioned quarantining, just isolating those with a disease, which, as we've talked about, has been around for centuries. However, modern technology has enabled us to get much better at it, with widespread testing and contact tracing being possible, as used in South Korea during this current epidemic. The use of such technology, though, raises privacy concerns, and is still fairly difficult to coordinate, with South Korea being the exception in its good handling of COVID-19, not the norm. If COVID-19 has shown anything, it's that current systems in place for tracking and stopping diseases are inadequate, and that we as a species were woefully unprepared. It seems likely that after COVID-19, the world may do some soul-searching and try to improve the capacity of the countries and international bodies to track and stop diseases from spreading. The science of epidemiology is already quite advanced, but the resources for those kind of efforts just have not been there, and to be fair, allocating such resources seemed unnecessary to many people. Of course, infectious diseases aren't the only diseases, and while infectious diseases may feel especially important right now, chronic diseases have actually become more and more important to address, as infectious diseases overall have been beaten back. Most of these cannot be spread directly from person to person, but are often results of environmental, behavioral, and biological factors, meaning that many can be prevented too. For example, smoking, as it turns out, is pretty bad for you, being linked to lung cancer, COPD, heart disease, stroke, and, well, a bunch of other things. Quitting smoking reduces many of these associated risks by huge margins even just after a few years. And so accordingly, getting folks to quit smoking is really good for public health. In recent years in the United States, there have been many new regulations on smoking, including taxes, banning it from certain public areas, age limits, and advertising about the negative health effects. I'm sure pretty much everybody has seen some form of ad talking about how terrible smoking is for you. Since 1990, the number of deaths from smoking in the United States has dropped from about 166 deaths per 100,000 people to just 75. It's not just the U.S. either. Essentially, every country has seen a decrease in smoking death rates, and that trend is likely to continue. Historically, almost every country sees an increase in smoking, and then a peak, and then a decline. So given enough time, it's probable that smoking rates will keep dropping. These trends aren't necessarily going to be the same across every substance that's bad for us, but as the negative effects of things become clear, they tend to get regulated to reduce their impact. For example, right now in the United States, public policy debates have begun exploring regulations on sugar and sodium, which contribute to obesity and high blood pressure, some of the major health problems of our day. Over time, we will probably continue to reduce our exposure to stuff that's bad for us through a combination of regulations and personal choices. Alright, so that covers a lot of the preventative stuff, but what about treatments once a disease has already manifested? There too, there's plenty of room for improvement. Technology and knowledge in healthcare has continued to improve steadily with time, which should be clear from the other two seasons of this show so far. However, the accessibility of those advances definitely leaves something to be desired. We've talked about why health insurance is necessary for public health, and a number of different ways societies have tried to make that available to everyone. In much of Europe and North America, many people do have adequate access to healthcare, but across the globe is a very different story. In a 2017 report, the World Health Organization and the World Bank estimated that about half of the world's population is unable to obtain essential services like childhood vaccines, basic medications, access to hospitals, and treatments for certain diseases. The good news is that the healthcare services are increasing their reach over time. This is probably linked to the decrease in poverty we mentioned earlier, but also comes from more countries reforming their healthcare systems. Since the 1990s, many countries across the world took steps to increase healthcare access, with notable examples including South Korea, Taiwan, Israel, and Thailand, all of which introduced universal healthcare coverage. I think we can continue to expect that universal health coverage will continue to expand to more countries, which will allow more people to get healthcare when they need it. Call me an optimist, but I genuinely think that public health will continue to get better. We have made incredible progress over many years, as you've learned with me in this season. Science will continue to advance, and the spread of that science will also continue to advance. I have no idea when, but I hope that someday we will live in a world where people have access to their basic needs, many health problems are prevented altogether, and when those problems do arise, healthcare is readily available to those who need it. I hope you've enjoyed Season 3 of The History of Medicine. I'm your host, writer and researcher, Kirby Gong, and my editor is Jojo Tang, and our cover artist is Angie Lee. Our music comes from Muse Open. If you've enjoyed the show, please let me know with the links in the show notes, or let others know with your words in real life or maybe your review. Thank you for listening, and expect regular episodes to resume in about 4 weeks when I've completed some new research on our next topic, the history of mental illness.